Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2018-1007, the State of Ohio versus Emmerich Bozo. For the appellant, Mr. Oshaki.
Good morning. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, Cuyahoga County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney Greg Oshaki, on behalf of the appellant, the State of Ohio. With me at the council table is Assistant Prosecuting Attorney Marcus Henry, who is trial counsel on this matter. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. In State versus Romero, this court held that Strickland's two-pronged test must be applied where a non-citizen moves to withdraw their guilty plea based on allegations of ineffective assistance of plea stage counsel regarding the immigration consequences. In assessing Strickland's prejudice prong, the court also stated that the defendant must present more than post hoc assertions about how he would have pleaded but for his attorney's alleged deficiencies. Rather, the trial court should look to contemporaneous evidence that substantiates that claim. Here, the only contemporaneous evidence in the record is that the trial court advised the defendant of the potential immigration consequences under Revised Code 2943.031A, and that the trial court went above and beyond that advisement to make sure that the defendant understood those consequences. Based on that record, the appellate court reversed the trial court's decision to deny the defendant's motion to vacate. We're asking that this court reverse the 8th District and to affirm the trial court's decision. As far as background, in June of 2016, Mr. Bozo, who is not a U.S. citizen, was indicted on 18 counts relating to two separate allegations of sexual assault.
These were cold case rapes, counsel?
They were, Your Honor.
And were they stranger rapes, or was he a known suspect at the time of the reported incident?
He was a known suspect at the time of the reported incident.
In both instances?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And during the pendency of the case, did defense counsel file a motion for pre-indictment delay?
It did, Your Honor. That motion was denied.
Okay. Yes. After hearing, or?
I'm not sure if it was after a hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
The first incident occurred, this was a cold case rate. The first incident occurred in June 1996. The victim was a 13-year-old female. In the second case, the second incident occurred in November of 1996. The victim was an adult female. During plea negotiations, the...
Counsel, can I ask a question? You said the only thing that's in the record is that the trial court properly gave the advisement about the potential consequences of deportation.
Correct, Your
correct.
Honor.
And Mr. Bozo is alleging ineffective assistance of counsel?
Correct, Your Honor.
For failure to tell him of what I guess appears to be mandatory deportation consequences, or at least some ill-advised, equivocal potential?
Well, I think the actual advisement was that Mr. Bozo pleading guilty to the sex offense would be placed in deportation. That's what his immigration attorney told him. You will be placed in immigration.
I thought his attorney told him, I wouldn't rely, there's a potential out here, but I wouldn't rely on it.
Correct. But you will be placed in deportation. You may have an out, but
that wasn't true, correct?
It was not true under that specific subsection.
So he was not properly advised by his counsel?
Well, we get to the point where the lack of record here, that advisement is also, it says, this is a very preliminary conclusion. And the immigration counsel said, I will supply a more comprehensive advisement for you shortly. There's no evidence as to whether or not there's no evidence what that more comprehensive advisement was.
Or, as you were getting ready to say, whether it was ever provided.
Whether it was ever provided, whether Mr. Bozo even waited for that more comprehensive advisement.
Counsel, he did pursue an action with regard to the deportation under another code section, did he not?
Correct, Your Honor.
Unsuccessfully?
I believe it's unsuccessful, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, but that was post-plea?
Yes, Your Honor.
So would you agree that if indeed there was no follow-up, or, you know, we don't have, that's not in the record, he was improperly advised by his counsel?
If there was no follow-up?
Well, we don't know in the record whether there was or was not.
Correct, Your Honor.
So prior to that point, was the information he received from counsel correct?
The information regarding a potential relief
correct.
Under 212C was not correct, Your Honor.
So why isn't that ineffective assistance of counsel?
Because there's two, well, that may satisfy the first strong prong of Strickland, but there's still the prejudice prong as well.
He said he would not have pled guilty.
That's a post hoc assertion, Your Honor.
But there's case law that says that will affirm the denial, saying he didn't say he would not have pled guilty.
But in Romero, this court said that we can't just look to post hoc assertions, and it's the appellant's burden of proof to demonstrate with contemporaneous evidence that but for his counsel's alleged deficient advice, he would not have pled guilty. And there's nothing in the record here of that contemporaneous evidence.
Was there a hearing?
There was, Your Honor.
But saying I would not have pled guilty isn't sufficient?
Not in a post hoc assertion. Mr. Bozo did not appear for the hearing. He was in detention. There's no evidence in the record that they asked to transport him up for the hearing. There's no evidence in the record that Mr. Bozo asked to appear by Skype or video conference. All they wanted was just a post hoc assertion in an affidavit, which can't be cross-examined. There's no contemporaneous evidence that substantiates that claim, which is what this court held in Romero, or stated in Romero, we must look for.
Well, counsel, in essence, Mr. Bozo reached a dead end when it came to whatever the consequence was going to be for deportation. There was no avenue, no matter what he pled to, or he went to trial and got convicted of. He could not have been successful in a deportation effort. Am I correct?
As far as the plea, or as far as the plea and the trial?
The consequence of a finding of guilt and a sentence imposed will trigger a deportation, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And there was no way of getting around it. There was no federal statute that would have allowed him to exercise a choice to follow that and then escape the consequences of deportation.
Well, he did file for relief in the immigration court under, I think it was Section 212H.
Right.
There was a hearing on that.
Correct.
There was evidence taken, and based on that evidence, the court said there was no relief. So he did have a potential avenue. He was ultimately unsuccessful in that avenue.
Well, counsel, I read the transcript of the plea hearing, and Mr. Henry's cross-examination of Mr. Slack at the trial counsel, and wasn't the sole focus of his consideration to enter this plea based on what Mr. Slack had testified to? He said, I contacted this attorney because I was trying to find out what I could plead to avoid immigration consequences.
First, Your Honor, it was not cross-examination. They didn't even call direct. Mr. Schlackett as a witness. The state called him as a witness.
On direct exam.
On direct exam.
Okay.
And Mr. Schlackett said, I wanted to find out what the immigration consequences would be. Mr. Schlackett also testified that he offered or asked for a plea of two abductions, which the state rejected. The state said, based on the circumstances of these cases, there's got to be one sex offense, and it was determined to be a sexual battery in the first incident, and an abduction in the second. After that plea was given to defense counsel, that's when defense counsel talked to the immigration attorney. The immigration attorney indicated that based on the sex offense, he will face deportation proceedings. So that was known.
But also within that communication was incorrect information that he had a possibility of relief?
He had a possibility of relief under one section of the code, possibly.
And that was an incorrect statement?
That was an incorrect statement, Your Honor.
All right.
What further question, why isn't it enough to say I would not have pled guilty if I knew I was going to be deported? My only avenue of not being deported is to take my chances at trial and be acquitted.
Well, that, Your Honor, that the Lee decision goes into, you know, we can't just, there's a high burden that has to be reached in Strickland. Lee says it's a high hurdle. I think they're quoting Padilla. And we can't, just based on post hoc assertions, otherwise every defendant, that non-citizen defendant, could enter into a plea, wait until there was a situation where they're facing deportation.
Well, not if they've been properly advised of deportation consequences.
I'm sorry?
Not if you've been properly advised mm-hmm. of deportation consequences, then if they can say, well, I didn't know, but if the record demonstrates, well, if your lawyer said being convicted of this offense will lead to deportation.
But and that's part of the reason why you need to have a hearing. You need to determine whether or not we look for contemporaneous evidence to substantiate those post hoc claims. And there's nothing in this record substantiating that claim.
The claim that he was not properly advised about the 212 out?
No, the statement that he would not have entered into the plea agreement. In this case, Your Honor, he was either, if he goes to trial, he's looking at substantial prison and deportation.
He's looking at acquittal.
Or looking at acquittal. But he's looking at, with this plea, limited prison, mm-hmm. and deportation proceedings. Based on that, I mean, I think it's just as rational, based on this record, to indicate that the lack of prison time or decreasing his exposure to prison was the determinative factor.
Well, let's talk about it. It's a state that really controls the plea, and he was indicted with gun specifications. Isn't that correct? In at least one of the counts?
I don't know.
Rape charges, serious charges that could have put him in prison for decades based on the factual allegations, right?
Yes, there was a life tale to the rape count.
And so the plea gives him the opportunity to be what eventually occurred, placed on community control. How did that happen? Did that reflect some type of procedure hurdle from the state's perspective that made you feel that was the only alternative to offer him that plea? Or was the fact that he was going to be deported, did that go into the state's consideration?
That was one of the issues that the state wanted to get into when it was examining Mr. Schlackett. What was the determinative factor? Because there were negotiations, and the state's bottom line was, you must plead to a sex offense here if you're going to plead. So that's where we were trying to get into the issue with Mr. Schlackett. What is, you know, what was the determinative factor? Was it lessening the exposure to prison and facing deportation? And we were precluded from doing that. They asserted the attorney-client privilege, which...
Counsel, was the plea offer, you're going to plead to these, you know, the lesser offenses, and we will recommend community control, or we'll stand silent on, you know, the consequence with the court?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
It wasn't. So you asked for prison time?
I believe so.
Okay, so that wasn't really a concession that the court gave him community control, right?
Correct. And I think the court gave, and again, this is not in a record because none of the transcripts were put in a record, but I think the court's figured that this guy's facing deportation, I'm not going to put him in prison.
Okay, well, you don't know that.
I don't know that, but we don't know that, just like we don't know what the determinative factor was, because none of this contemporaneous evidence was put into the record. And it was all by the actions or inactions of the appellant. He made this record with no contemporaneous evidence, and then he used the attorney-client privilege as a sword and a shield.
Counsel, what contemporaneous evidence were you looking for?
Well, for instance, in the Lee case, there's testimony from the defense counsel at the plea stage where he says, you know, Lee asked me continuously, what are the immigration ramifications? There's none of that here. We tried to ask that question, and we were shut down.
And I assume, too, that you tried to get the defendant's testimony as well?
We did not. Your Honor, it's their burden of proof. They have to put on that evidence. Also in Lee, citing to the transcript of the plea hearing, during the plea colloquy, the judge in Lee gave the defendant the federal version of the immigration advisement and then asked him, does this affect your decision to plea? And Lee said, yes. The court said, how? And he said, I don't understand. Talked to his attorney. The attorney testified again that I told him it didn't matter, it was just a formality. So in Lee, and which Romero cites extensively, the court looked to contemporaneous evidence from the plea colloquy, which is not in the record here, and contemporaneous evidence from not only the defendant's testimony, but also the plea stage counsel's testimony. And we were precluded from getting any of that testimony on all fronts.
Thank you. You've used your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Meshevitz.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, I wonder if you could start with your friend on the other side finished, and that was with the lack of evidence before the trial court.
Yes, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, Daniel Meshevitz on behalf of Emerick Bozo. As it relates to that issue, Your Honor, the record is full of compelling contemporaneous evidence. We've got first the affidavit by Emerick Bozo, which is Docket 43, Exhibit A, where he indicates that but for this erroneous advice.
That's not contemporaneous evidence, though, is it?
It is.
Well, isn't that the exact opposite of what Romero said? I mean, Romero said you can't have post hoc assertions of how you would have pleaded, but you need contemporary evidence to support that. So do you think we ought to overrule Romero today, and then we just decided to?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Romero says that we've got to look at the totality of the circumstances. So if we look at the record here, in that affidavit,
the first thing you said was he put an affidavit about how he would have pleaded, which is exactly what Romero says is not sufficient.
That is the post hoc assertion, right?
Right.
Okay, and I agree, Your Honor. Further in the affidavit, it indicates that he's here as a refugee. And if we look at the definition of refugee, it's someone that cannot return to their country because of persecution.
Was that established through any other source, that he's here as a refugee?
It was also attached as an exhibit to the motion to withdraw a plea. Exhibit A was the affidavit. Exhibit B was the actual deportation proceedings that he was in, which indicated why he was in deportation proceedings, which was the conviction in this matter.
No.
And then the fact that he was
a
refugee.
I asked, was there any evidence that he was here as a refugee, other than his own words?
The sworn statement that he made, and then also the paperwork from Immigration and Customs that was attached as an exhibit.
So they recognized he was a refugee?
Yeah, he's been a refugee since 1986.
Well, and is there evidence that today he couldn't return to his country?
Yeah, there's nothing in the record.
There's nothing in the record on this. So we know in 1986 he couldn't return, but...
No, I didn't get to finish answering your question respectfully, Your Honor. There's nothing that his status as a refugee has been revoked, so he is still a refugee today.
He was a refugee, I'm sorry, from what country? Remind me.
Romania, Your Honor.
And so the political situation in Romania has changed pretty dramatically since 1986, right?
But there's nothing in the record that suggests that his status as a refugee has changed. He's still a refugee. That has not.
But there's
been,
also nothing that suggests that.
That has not been revoked.
There's nothing to suggest that the situation is still the same today, that he could not return there today.
Well, sure, his status is still that of a refugee, and there's nothing in the record to say that that situation has changed or that that country has changed.
Is there anything in the record that says, at the time I entered this plea, I only did it contingent upon the fact that I would not be deported.
That he would not be deported?
Yes. Is there any statement from his attorney or the attorney he consulted with for the deportation matters that would show contemporaneous with the plea, in his mind, the only reason he did it is an assurance that he would not be deported?
No, the inducement for the plea was a potential relief under INA Section 212C. Why that's significant, Your Honors, INS v. Sire, which is a U.S. Supreme Court case, it outlines that under Section 212C, which he was told he would have the potential for relief under, it grants very broad discretion to waive deportation, even with an aggravated felony that we're talking about here in the same type of aggravated felony as in
Padilla. But he wasn't eligible for that.
He was told that he was, and it turned out that he was not. And
but he was eligible for Section H.
Well, the difference between Section H, one, he was ordered deported in the state's memorandum of jurisdiction to this court. They indicated that he was ordered deported April 30th of 2018. And the difference of that section is that you must show extreme hardship to your family member, and it has to be exceptional and extremely unusual hardship. And even if you can show that, they still do not have to grant it based on the underlying offense.
Okay, so Section C didn't help him out because he wasn't eligible. Is that correct?
Yes.
12C.
The Supreme
and
Court.
And 212H didn't help him out because he did have a hearing there and tried to prove things, and they weren't buying it, right?
Well, I don't know that they were. The problem is that
he wasn't successful with an H.
He was not successful.
Okay, so is there anything that you have that he that was is attested to at the time he made the hearing that I'm or the plea? I'm doing this because I'm assured that I have an avenue to stay in this court or stay in this country in spite of what I'm pleading to.
Your Honor, there's nothing in the record to say that he was absolutely assured that he would stay in the country. What he was advised, he sought advice of an immigration attorney, and he was advised that he had the potential for relief under 212C, which is very generous. It's so broad, and there's so much discretion.
Well, the immigration advice he got was that this is a very preliminary statement. Is there any evidence in the record about how he followed up with that?
There's not evidence beyond the two emails. The emails are clear that Exhibit B, which is attached to docket number 3, states Exhibit 1B, is the email from trial counsel, which says, I referred this cold case rape non-citizen defendant to you for opinion as to what I could plead him to.
Wait, I can
keep him in the country.
Sir, I can read that, okay? But I guess my question to you is, the response that the immigration attorney said was as a very preliminary conclusion, right? You're presenting this as that this was his firm advice, and I'm looking for some evidence in the record that there was a follow-up on that.
Well, whether or not there was a follow-up is irrelevant to the issue of whether he got wrong.
Sir, it's not irrelevant to me. There's no evidence. I'm curious why, or if you did, and if you didn't, why not? There was no evidence presented about what the follow-up to this was.
Well, he got advice that he relied on, and as a result of that, they told him that he had potential for this relief under 212C. It's not guaranteed relief, but he had a shot at it.
Do you think, as an attorney, when someone says to you, as a very preliminary conclusion, and later says, I will supply a more comprehensive advisement for you shortly, that you wouldn't expect someone to follow up on that?
Well, that is the ineffective assistance of counsel, that the trial lawyer should not have proceeded without
anything in the record that the trial lawyer didn't follow up on that?
Well, he testified that this is the email that he sent this morning. It basically says, I need to know this morning, and this is the follow-up email that he got. So he then went into court, and they proceeded with the matter. But this is clear that he's going to be placed into deportation proceedings. The issue is that he has a potential for relief under a very favorable statute, 212C, and that statute was revoked if it's based on the date of conviction before April 1st of 97. It's clear in these emails that the reason there was an error is because they were talking about the date of the indictment. Well, it's clear, it's succinct law, just like in Padilla, that it's the cutoff. The cutoff is based on the date of conviction.
All right, here's the question here. When the advice from the immigration lawyer was, here's what I'm thinking, it's not written in stone, this is preliminary, I'm going to get back to you with more advice, more concrete. Is that a good summation of where the immigration lawyer's response was?
It says, I will supply more comprehensive advisement for you shortly.
Okay. And then that was given to whom?
This was given to trial counsel.
Okay, so trial counsel's talking to his client and says, hey, here's the potential here, but the operative word is potential. And we'll get more advice from whomever the immigration lawyer is, correct?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Your Honor?
Trial counsel gets the preliminary advice from the counsel that's involved in immigration.
Yes.
All right. And conveys that to his client, right?
Yes.
And tells him this is a potential. This isn't a certainty, correct?
Yes.
He couldn't say that this is a certainty because, number one, even if the advice was correct and he was eligible under 212C, which he wasn't, he'd still have to go for a hearing, and the hearing would be a gamble, right?
Well, what's certain is that he didn't qualify for that section.
Understood.
And that had he qualified, it would have been a very good gamble. And even if it was a gamble, Your Honor, that was the gamble that he wanted, and that's what induced the plea. And
we, that's no different. We don't know what he wanted, do we?
No.
We do. He swore in his affidavit that but for that erroneous statement, he would not have pled. He would. His only other gamble would have been trial.
Let me talk, okay? In Romero, we said that in addition to that statement, you have to have contemporaneous evidence to support that. So are you asking us to overrule that part of Romero? Okay, then tell us what your contemporaneous evidence was. I haven't heard that yet. I've heard speculation about what he might have been thinking, but I haven't seen any. There's no testimony about that. Let me finish, then you can talk, okay? We haven't seen any testimony about that. So tell me what the contemporaneous evidence. There were four things listed in Romero. What you put forth to meet those?
Well, Your Honor, one thing would be the email from trial counsel, which says, "What can we plead him to and keep him in the country? I really need to know."
But that's not contemporaneous evidence of what he was thinking, right? Well, we don't know what impact that had on him.
Well, it is contemporaneous evidence that deportation was very important. And then we have the email from Immigration Counsel, which is evidence that he sought the advice of Immigration Counsel. So being deported and staying in the country was very important. And just like Lee, he came here when he was 21 years old. He had been here for over three decades. Has no ties to Romania, just like Lee had no ties to Korea. And in addition, if we look at the affidavit itself, he was here as a refugee, and INA section 1101A42A, this is a situation where someone cannot return to their country because of their race, religion, nationality.
But again, I don't see evidence that he can't return to the country today. He was granted that status at that time, right? I mean, I'm old enough to remember I watched the dictator of Romania be deposed on Christmas Day. So it's changed dramatically since 1986. So,
well, he's still refugee status. The government has not revoked that status.
Counsel, one thing that might have been helpful is maybe the transcript of the sentencing. So why don't we have the transcript?
Your Honor, this was not a challenge of the Rule 11 colloquy. And in addition to the contemporaneous evidence, one of the other factors that Romero says that we have to look at is the consequences of going to trial. And if we look at this case, the facts were so uncompelling that he got probation.
So
and the state dismissed 28 of 30 counts.
Well, here's my concern. It's really an evidentiary concern, as the other justices have expressed. But I recognize your client doesn't want to testify. Okay, we'll give him that. But the lawyer also could have explained what he was thinking at the time. But nobody's waiving attorney-client privilege. We don't have the transcript. I mean, it's your burden to prove.
Well,
that's where I'm having trouble.
Well, Mr. Bozo was not there because he was in INS custody in Seneca Jail Cincinnati, Ohio.
He could have waived attorney-client privilege.
Well, he didn't have that option because he wasn't here. And this was not a situation.
What do you mean he didn't have that option over here?
Well, he was not.
He could have waived privilege.
Well, he did not waive privilege, and this was not an attack.
Well, I know he didn't, but it's his burden. He could, as a matter of law, he could waive privilege and let everybody know what was going on.
Well, he swore to a statement that he would not have entered this plea had he known that.
That's not the same thing.
Well, and there's.
You've admitted that this affidavit, well after the fact, is not contemporaneous evidence. So what we're left with is we don't know what the attorney said to him. We don't know what he said back to his attorney. Can we presume that he knew the importation lawyer or lawyer's advice in that email? Can we presume that? How can we presume that? We don't know what he was thinking contemporaneous with the decision to make the plea. We don't have that from the lawyer. We don't have that from the client, and we don't have a transcript of anything that happened at that stage.
Well, may I respond, Your Honor?
Sure.
This is not a situation where post-plea the defendant is attacking a trial strategy that was made by the trial lawyer. This is a situation where he's made an assertion that but for this wrong advice, and in an area that was succinct and straightforward, just like Padilla, he would not have pled. He swore to that statement. And the contemporaneous evidence are all these things, the fact that he sought immigration counsel, which is in the email that's in the record, the fact that trial counsel said, you know what, I need to know what we can plead to keep him in the in this country.
And that email was on the morning of the plea, right?
That's correct.
The morning's on the plea. The defense lawyer is saying, I need to know the correct advice because the judge wants to know how we're resolving this case. And it's undisputed that the information in that communication is incorrect, right?
That's correct.
So the proper advice would to be continue the hearing, not walk him into the courtroom and enter the plea.
Correct. And that is very compelling. How often do we have an
but
email?
But counselor, let me ask, but we don't know if there was any further advice supplied, do we?
We don't, but we know that this advice was given and it was wrong.
But I mean, you've kind of.
Well, we do, Your Honor.
No, let me finish.
Respectfully, we do know.
Let me finish, sir. Let me finish. You've kind of avoided the question when I asked you before, but I just went through the transcript, and the attorney was asked at the hearing whether or not a more comprehensive advisement was supplied other than the email. And he said he didn't know. If he did, it would have gone directly to Mr. Bozo. I can't confirm or deny it because I don't have anything else from Mr. Bartel. So we don't even know what advice was supplied, do we?
Well, respectfully, we do, because we have the sworn statement by Mr. Bozo where he indicates, but for this erroneous advice, that he had relief available to him under 212C, he would not have pled guilty.
He wasn't at the hearing. He was never cross-examined on that. There was no opportunity to ask him questions
he
about that.
He couldn't be at the hearing. He was in custody in Cincinnati, and immigration would
not. Were there any efforts made to get him there? Is there anything in the record that there was a request, that there was subpoena? I mean,
The state did not try to get him there.
It wasn't the state's burden to get him there.
Well, they would not bring him there for me. Certainly. They have no interest in bringing him.
What did you do to try to get him? What did you do to try to get him there?
Of Mr. Bozo.
What did you do to try to get him there?
Well, they will not bring him, and we
put. Wait a minute. When did you try to get him for? What did you want him transported for?
Your Honor, they are making the assertion that he wasn't there, and they wanted him there, but they didn't make an effort. We had an affidavit attached to the motion that asserted that but for this erroneous advice, he would not have pled.
Do you agree that it would have been a better option to have your client at the hearing?
Well, I don't know. Maybe we would have pursued other things, but this record is full.
Okay, did you ask, go through any proceedings to have him at the hearing? Were you the attorney at the hearing?
I was the attorney at the hearing, Your Honor.
Okay, did you make application to have him transported to Cleveland?
Your Honor,
Yes or no? That's just a yes or no question.
No, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Oh, I have another question.
All right, go ahead.
In light of all that discussion, you met with him, I'm sure, talked to him before the hearing, right?
Well, Your Honor.
Did you or did you not?
I didn't meet with him, but I talked to him.
Okay, you talked to him. Why didn't you waive privilege and put everything on the record?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that he had to waive privilege here. He's not attacking a strategy that the trial attorney made. He got wrong advice. He relied on that advice, and that's what induced the plea. And all this contemporaneous evidence is the things that we've talked about, the fact that he's a refugee, the fact that he sought immigration counsel, the fact that trial counsel said, I need to know what will keep him in the country. And he was told that he could have this avenue of relief under 212C, and he entered a plea then wanting to pursue that relief, and he's told, no, you're absolutely out. It's black and white.
But wouldn't we know what was the contemporaneous activity, discussions, evidence, if he had waived privilege? If he had waived privilege?
Well, I think we have everything here without him waiving the privilege.
We don't have the conversations because they were withheld.
Well, we've got the emails, we've got the conversations by email, and we've got a sworn statement. In addition, we've got his status, we've got all this, and not to mention the other factors in Romero, that this case was, the facts were so uncompelling that he got probation, and the state dismissed 28 of the 30 counts, not to mention the evidence itself. His DNA, he was excluded, the co-defendant's DNA was there. He pled because he thought that he had a potential for relief under this very broad statute, 212C, and the Supreme Court of the United States has said, absolutely not. It's clear, it's succinct, it's not a gray area. Some areas of immigration are gray. This was not one of them. And the record's full of very compelling contemporaneous.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, you've used your time. Maybe take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, I would like to clear up one factual issue. The email from Immigration Counsel talking about his preliminary advisement was sent on September 21st, 2016. Mr. Bozo did not enter his plea until November 2nd, 2016. That's straight from Appellee's statement of facts. So there was no last-minute rush job here. Mr. Bozo had plenty of time to obtain a final advisement. There's no record whether he did that or not. The only record we have before this court is he received that preliminary advisement that said you shouldn't rely on it, and then he disregarded his counsel's advice. If there are no further questions, I would just...
Once the plea was entered, how did the switch in attorneys and the alert, the motion to vacate, how soon did that occur?
Well, Mr. Bozo was placed in immigration proceedings, I believe it was in January. The plea was taken in November.
Okay.
He was placed in immigration proceedings in January, and then the motion to vacate was filed sometime in the summer of that year, either June or July of 2017.
And did he terminate his prior trial counsel, or?
That I don't know, Your Honor.
Okay.
All right. If there are
Thank
no,
you.
Okay, if there are no further questions, just ask that you reverse the decision of the 8th District and affirm the trial court's decision denying the motion to vacate. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.